This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The Tigers are wrapping up their season with some final road games this week. Not a great season, 2020. By contrast, it's been a great year at Hamtramck Stadium, one of a handful of Negro League ballparks left in the United States. This was where legends like Satchel Paige and Josh Gibson played. Hamtramck Stadium is headed for a new future with a plan for renovation and revival. Here to give us the details is Gary Gillette. He's the founder and president of the nonprofit Friends of Historic Hamtramck Stadium. Gary, welcome to Stateside.
Oh, thanks very much. I really enjoy being on your show.
Gary, will you tell us about the origin story for the stadium? What teams was it originally intended to house?
Well, Hamtramck Stadium was built in 1930, and it was originally intended to house the Negro League Detroit Stars, who were moving from the east side of Detroit. But it also, from the beginning, had many other sports and events there. It had high school baseball, high school football for Hamtramck. It had semi-pro baseball. It had soccer. They actually had some soccer matches in the 30s with teams from Europe. It had softball, both men's and women's. Of course, they called it girls back then. Joe Louis had a softball team, the great boxing champion, had a softball team that played there. It had a Japanese all-star team come through in 1935, which is a forerunner of the Tokyo Giants, where the New York Yankees of Japan, Japanese major leagues. It had boxing, including integrated boxing matches staged by the UAW. It had church leagues. It had concerts. It had war bond rallies during World War II. It was an amazing place and, you know, thoroughly utilized by everyone who could afford to pay the rent. And in the 30s, was under private control. And starting in 1941, it was under the city control.
Now, the Hamtramck that we know today is just a very diverse place. And Hamtramck has been home to so many different people with so many different backgrounds and backstories over the years. What was Hamtramck like in the 30s and the 40s when this stadium was first in its heyday?
Well, Hamtramck was still growing from a population, I believe, around 20,000 in the 20s to its peak of over 50,000 during World War II. It was mostly Polish and Polish American, a huge number of immigrant Poles and Polish Americans with some other white ethnics from Europe, Ukrainians. It always had a small black population. There was an African American community on the east side in a neighborhood called Ducktown that is still there. And it also had a small African American community on the northwest side of Hamtramck. So it was a diverse place in the sense that it was welcoming to African Americans. When the city of Detroit was still segregating its schools, Hamtramck public schools are integrated. When the city of Detroit was rigidly trying to enforce all sorts of de facto segregation, Hamtramck was pretty good. I'm not claiming it was a racial utopia, but white doctors and dentists treated black patients. There was a black dentist who had white patients. Black people could own houses. In most of the city of Detroit, black people could not buy a house. It was a pretty good place and a pretty accommodating place for African Americans. It was one of the reasons the ballpark was put there.
How would you describe the relationship between the Negro League and the white teams like the Detroit Tigers in that period?
There was essentially no relationship. The major leagues pretended from, well, late 19th century up through the 1945 when Jack Roosevelt Robinson was signed by the Brooklyn Dodgers. And then in 1946, he played in the minor leagues. In 1947, he made his debut in the major leagues. The major leagues pretended there was no barrier, there was no color line, but of course, that was a deception. And occasionally, major league players would play exhibition games against Negro League teams. This was fairly common in the teens and 20s until Commissioner Landis shut that down. After that, you had to compose a special all-star team, and only a handful of major leaguers played in them, although a lot of white minor leaguers played against Negro League teams. But that was off-season exhibitions. The black teams and the African-American community was very acutely aware when they were playing white professionals because that was a test of how good they were. And Negro League teams and players more than held their own. They won more than half the games. The white teams, if they lost, could claim, well, we weren't really trying, just a payday for us. It doesn't really mean anything. But it was really a payday for them. They weren't proving anything, and they always had an excuse if they lost. But they did play hard in most cases, and they did lose more than half the games. So that was basically the relationship. There was no business relationship. in the African-American community, and particularly the African-American newspapers, there was talk of maybe the Negro Leagues becoming minor leagues for Major League Baseball, a feeder system, or maybe a Negro League team joining the Major Leagues. But of course, that was their wish, and Major League Baseball had no determination they were ever going to grant that.
Right. If we were to visit Hamtramck Stadium back at the height when the Detroit Stars and the Detroit Wolves were coming through and playing, what would it have looked like? What would the experience have been like for the fans of that time?
Well, it'd be very different for today's fans who are used to these huge gold-plated ballparks, which we know and love. It would have been very different from even Tiger Stadium. It was very small. It seated about 9,000. However, that was about the size of a good minor league park back then. In 1930, when Hamtramck Stadium opened, it was said in the Detroit News that it was the equivalent of the best minor league parks in the country. So it was a good minor league park, but those things were very crude by our current standards. It was built of structural steel and wood. Almost all the seating was bleacher seating. There were chairs, a few rows of chairs for people who had the extra half dollar or so to pay for a chair, but most of it was bleacher seating. It was very intimate. The field was close to the diamond. You had essentially, you were sitting hip by hip with people because the more tickets they sold, the more people they crowded into the bleachers.
Like any sports stadium anywhere.
Well, right. But back then they crowded them closer. Yeah. I mean, of course, their butts were skinnier too. But for the African-American community, it was sort of a celebration of their athletes and how good they could be. Baseball back then was unquestionably the national pastime, far more popular than any other sport, with the possible exception of boxing, which was huge. But boxing is not a team sport.
Right.
So on weekends and on Mondays, the Negro League teams would typically get good crowds, especially Sunday and Monday. On Sunday, African-Americans would go to church and come to the ballpark on their Sunday best, literally. On Mondays, which was typically the day off for domestic workers, they would also draw good crowds. The crowds are mostly black. It's impossible to know what the real ratio is. You see estimates of anywhere from 5 to 30% white fans at Negro League games. I say 15% is probably a good overall estimate. It would have been lower for Negro League teams during the week. There'd be fewer white fans, higher on a weekend when you had a glamorous team like the Kansas City Monarchs or the Homestead Grays playing, especially if you had a standout pitcher like Satchel Paige on the mound. That's when you would have more white fans.
For sure.
In the South, the fans were segregated. In the North, they typically weren't segregated, although in places like St. Louis, they might be.
What kind of shape is Hamtramck Stadium in today?
It's been closed off and neglected since 1997. It is awaiting restoration. We just restored the field. Literally in the last month, we restored the field. The outfield, we just put a new soccer pitch on there that has striped out a soccer pitch yesterday, the Hamtramck Recreation Department. The infield, which is completely rebuilt, excavated and rebuilt using professional quality materials in terms of the clay, sand mix, the top dressing, the bases, the mound and home plate and the batter's box. So we're going to give it another week for the grass and the sod to knit their roots. And then on the 29th, we're going to have a small public announcement at the home plate that the baseball diamond is ready for use. Of course, it's so late in the year, there's not going to be much activity this year there, but we're looking forward to having a full schedule of high school and vintage baseball teams and soccer and everything starting next spring.
And it sounds like you're just getting started. The Friends of the Stadium, the group that you're president of, has secured a federal grant for nearly $500,000. How are you going to spend the money?
Well, that $500,000 was actually secured by Wayne County, and they should get credit for it. Wayne County has been a fabulous partner for us. They have worked alongside the city of Hamtramck. We also work with the Hamtramck Public Schools, and we're now working with the Michigan Municipal League Foundation, and we're all pulling for the same goal, which is restore Veterans Memorial Park and the associated athletic facilities, include Hamtramck Stadium. So that $500,000 is part of the puzzle. We really need about $2.3 million to redo the grandstand. Wayne County secured $500,000 in federal funds, community development block grants, $400,000 the Tigers have committed. They secured another $500,000 for the National Park Service. That's the announcement you're thinking of. It's $490,000 for the National Park Service for their African-American Cultural Heritage Program. And that's a key grant because it gets us closer to that $2.3 million. And we're soon to announce another $250,000 grant from a major foundation in Detroit. And that leaves us about $650,000 short of the $2.3 million we need to start redoing the grandstand next spring. We are confident we are going to have that money in hand and construction will begin next spring or early summer as soon as the ground is suitable.
What is your hope for how the park will be used by future generations?
I hope that it's a community asset like it once was. I love to see high school sports there. We want to see kids playing pickup games there. We are going to dedicate a block of time each week for community usage where kids can just come, and adults too, can just come and play, you know, baseball, they can play soccer, they can do any sport they want there because it's a community asset. There's not going to be any fence around the facility. It's going to be open to everyone. The park is open from sunup to sundown. And so we hope to have many, many events there, but mostly community usage and events where you have like a high school baseball team playing there, or you have an adult soccer recreation league playing there. We think it'll be used virtually every day from when the snow is off the ground and the mud is dries up until the snow flies in the fall.
Gary, the Negro League teams that brought the stadium to prominence, how many of those players are still with us today?
Very, very few. If you count the heyday of the Negro Leagues from 1920 to 1950, there are very few players who played in 1950 or earlier, because if you played in 1950 at the age 18, you would have been born in 32, and
right,
that means you'd be 88 now.
Right.
We have one local treasure, Ron Teasley, who is 93, and he is a Detroit native. He still lives in Detroit. He was a pioneering Black player at Northwestern High School playing baseball and basketball. He coached at Northwestern High School for more than two decades, baseball, basketball, and golf. He's in the Wayne State Athletic Hall of Fame, still holds several baseball records at Wayne State. He served in the Navy after World War II. He played professional baseball in the Dodgers organization in 1948 and also played for the Negro League New York Cubans in 48 when they were defending world champions. He is, as I said, he's 93. He's typical of the guys who are left. There are more guys left who played baseball in the Negro American League in the 1950s, but the Negro American League in the 1950s was very much reduced in quality because almost all the really good Black players had been signed by major league teams. So the farther you go into the 50s, the lower the quality of play was in the remaining Negro League because the better players were being taken up by the major leagues. So there are more guys left who played in the 50s, but even them, most of them are in their 80s. And we just have very few left. It's sad to see them passing.
Mm. There's a player whose name probably is known to Detroit baseball fans, Norman Stearns, better known as Turkey Stearns. And I know that his name is going to live on as a part of the park. First of all, will you tell us about his career?
Turkey Stearns was a native of Nashville. He was one of those gifted athletes. He started playing professional baseball in 1920 when he would have been 19. He was born in 1901. He played 3 years for minor Negro League teams in the South, Nashville, Montgomery. He then came north to Detroit, and he became a star pretty much instantly in 1923. He played for the Detroit Stars from 23 to 31. When the original Detroit Stars folded with the original Negro National League during the Depression at the end of the 31 season, he moved on to other teams. He did come back to Detroit in 37 to play for the new edition of the Detroit Stars. He won seven Negro League home run titles. He hit for about 350, which is basically one of the highest averages you would see in any given season. His career average is around 350. It's hard to get exactly what it was. He was what they call a five-tool player. He could hit for average, hit for power. He could run the bases. He was a very fast base runner and a smart base runner. He also had excellent range in the field and had a good throwing arm. He played center field, which is a key position in the outfield. He was a five-time Negro League All-Star, which doesn't sound like a lot because he had a career of 18 years, except that the Negro League All-Star game was founded in 1933. It was called the East-West game, the same year the Major League All-Star game was. So for the bulk of his career, there was no All-Star game. But after 33, when he was still on the twilight of his career, he still made five All-Star teams. We're naming the field, and the city of Hamtramck has agreed to name the field Turkey Stearns Field, but the name of the stadium will remain Hamtramck Stadium. So the name will be Turkey Stearns Field at Hamtramck Stadium.
What lit the fire under the group to name the field after Turkey Stearns?
We really wanted to see more recognition for him. Turkey Stearns is a Hall of Famer. He's in the National Baseball Hall of Fame at Cooperstown. But he was put there in 2000, 21 years after his death. And like he asked me, 25 years after he should have been elected. They didn't start putting Negro Leaguers in the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown until the early 70s. And then they put 10 of them in and then stopped doing it for a while. And then they stalled and put a few more in. He was put in very late and sadly after his death, as most of them were. We're trying to get more recognition. Even though he was a Nashville native, he was a Detroiter. He came to Detroit in 23. He played for the Stars. He made his home here in the offseason. He worked in auto plants starting in the late 30s. He worked 27 years at the Ford Rouge plant. He was a UAW member from the time the UAW organized Ford in 1941. He raised a family on the northwest side of Detroit. His two daughters are still in the Detroit area. They were both school teachers. It's a Detroit story. He is as Detroit as they come, except for not being born here. He was an admirable man. He was not a show-off or an egotist. He was very quiet. He let his playing speak for itself. Oddly, amongst ballplayers back then, not just black ballplayers, white ballplayers drank like fish most of the time. He did not drink and he did not carouse. So on a typical evening after the game, he would go home or he would go, like if they were out of town, he might go for a walk. There's a beautiful story Ron Teasley tells when Ron was, this is in 1945, when Turkey and Ron were playing for the Toledo Cubs in a minor Negro league. Turkey would have been 44 and Ron would have been 18. And Turkey took Ron on a tour of New Orleans, a walking tour after a game down there, and was mentoring this young ball player rather than going out to the clubs in New Orleans, which would have been fabulous to go out and listen to jazz music and carouse with the others. But he never did that. He was a really admirable ball player, husband, father, and citizen of Detroit.
For people who've never seen the park before, this is located in Veterans Memorial Park in Hamtramck. And we should say there's an online symposium that's happening this Thursday on the Negro Leagues, and there'll be all kinds of presentations, both from the county and experts and players. And I understand you've organized a free self-driving tour of the park for Thursday afternoon. Can you talk about how people will experience it? Like, what it'd be like driving through and what you've arranged to help interpret the place?
Sure. We're having an online symposium. I just want to mention it's free. There's no registration. You can connect via Zoom until the Detroit Historical Museum, which is hosting this, until their Zoom account is full. And then you can watch on Facebook Live either way. There's going to be a live event in the morning. We have recorded welcome remarks from Wayne County CEO Warren Evans. Comerica Bank, which is sponsoring us, is going to have a small talk. And then we're going to talk about the Negro Leagues having a panel discussion. Afterward, we're posting recorded presentations by presenters both locally and from around the country, as you mentioned. And in the afternoon, I'm leading what I call a do-it-yourself driving tour. We're going to drive to more than a half dozen sites associated with the Negro Leagues in Detroit. You drive in your own car. If you want to get out of your car at the site, you wear a mask and socially distance. I will give a talk at each site. We'll also have some other people speaking at different sites, including Hamtramck Stadium and the Church of the Messiah on the east side, which is a site associated with black baseball in 1895 in Detroit. After the tour, there will be MP3 files for each site posted on the web, so you can go to any site at any time and get your own tour. It'd be just like you were on a bus and the tour guide was talking to you. Thursday, it starts at 1 o'clock at Detroit Historical Museum and ends at 5:30 at the Church of the Messiah on Grand Boulevard on the east side near the Belle Isle Bridge. However, anyone can join the tour at any point and leave at any point, and they just drive themselves. We're posting maps on the web for every site, so you can go directly to that site or you can follow the tour. The tour will be up there afterwards, so people can say, hey, I'd like to go visit Mack Park. There'll be a page for Mack Park. It'll tell you how to get there. It'll tell you what its historical significance will be. There'll be a little bit of written information, and there'll be an MP3 file, mostly me, but occasionally other people talking about the history.
Gary Gillette is the founder and president of the Friends of Historic Hamtramck Stadium. Gary, thank you so much for talking to us about this, and congratulations on the renovation efforts.
Thanks so much, April. It's great to be on your show.